Welcome to the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast from the University of Birmingham. In each edition, we hear from an expert in a different field who gives us insider information on key trends, upcoming events, and what they think the near future holds.
Today, we're with Professor Kai Bongs, who is Professor of Cold Atom Physics and the local head of the Midlands Ultra Cold Atom Research Centre. Welcome, Kai.
Thank you.
Now, today comes with a bit of a disclaimer, which is that some of this might have to be simplified down for me. I'll say for me and not for our audience, because they may be ahead of me in the field of quantum physics, but it's a new one for me. So you look at cold atoms. Tell us what those are.
Well, essentially, it's all about like control. And so the basic thing physicists like to do is to take a problem into small pieces. And an atom is like more or less a basic building block of matter. And we cool it down, so we understand atoms very well, we control them very well by reducing all their translational degrees of freedom, which is like when we take out the energy of the motion, that's essentially cooling it down to very low temperatures. So we take a million atoms in a gas, cool it down to a billionth above absolute zero, and at that point, we actually notice that the atoms become very quantum mechanical, so they become fuzzy, the wave nature of matter becomes visible.
Okay, I'm going to stop right there still. Let's rewind here. So you essentially look at a tiny, tiny sample of atoms in a vacuum in a little glass cell.
Yes.
And how do you look at them?
So we look at them with laser light.
With lasers.
So just like a shadow, we shine light lasers on them. They scatter photons out of the beam and cast a shadow. And like that, we can see the density distribution. Or when we have like one of these quantum waves, we see more or less the density distribution in this matter wave. So we can learn directly about quantum effects. So it's a window to the quantum world, which like was not imaginable by like the pioneers like Einstein, Heisenberg, Bohr, who invented all the quantum mechanics. Now we can do the experiments they have introduced as Gedanken experiments and look at them with a CCD camera.
Wow. Another thing that surprised me about this area of work is the area of quantum computing. I imagine that computers can do anything nowadays, but apparently when you look at things on the quantum level, that's not true.
No, that's indeed the case. Like quantum computing is a way forward to solve problems where quantum physics is involved, like binding molecules into drugs. Conventional computer can really solve all the complexity of the quantum physics involved in that. Code cracking is another example where quantum computers might outperform classical ones and make all your credit cards vulnerable. So still, whenever you ask someone, when will quantum computing happen, he will say like 10, 20 years. And that's happening since 10, 20 years already. So it's a field which is very hard to achieve, really, to find the system which can do this quantum computation.
So at the moment, it's still 10, 20 years away. And in 10 years' time, it may well still be 10, 20 years away.
With cold atoms, we might have a stepwise approach there, doing first quantum simulation. So we build a quantum system with our cold sample, build all the physics around it like it would be, for example, in a high-temperature superconductor, and try to learn about the quantum physics involved to solve the quantum problem by modeling it with another system. So we are trying that approach, but only the future will tell if it works.
So far, we've talked at this kind of mind-blowing theoretical level, but cold atoms are already doing things for us. And one of those things they're doing is telling the time.
Yes, so indeed, at like National Physics Laboratory or in all other metrology labs in the world, there will be atom clocks, actually nowadays using cold atoms, to measure difference between energy levels, which finally give us the time, so define the second. And that's what you hear when you call the time service on the telephone. And also that's what helping GPS SatNav to work. So you have to have very accurate timing in order to measure distances to satellites. It's all based on a travel time distance measurement. So each of these satellites actually has an atomic clock on board, and working on atomic clocks to improve them will improve applications like that and open new areas.
So at the moment, if I'm driving around with my sat-nav, is my sat-nav talking to these atomic clocks?
Yes, in principle it is. Each satellite, as I said, has an atomic clock. Each satellite sends out a signal saying, okay, now I'm sending this signal, and puts a timestamp on it. And your sat-nav receives it and notices that it received it a bit later than the timestamp the satellite put on the signal. And of course, your satnav doesn't have an atomic clock in it. That would be too expensive. So instead of using three satellites to get X, Y, and Z, or mm-hmm. three dimensions of space, you use four to also get the time. So actually, your satnav gives you atomic time right also in the car, which most people don't notice, but it's very accurate time.
So the importance of that is, I mean, I'm always late, so having a second out on my clock on my dashboard is really not going to make any difference. But my sat-nav, it's going to make a big difference in terms of where it tells me to go.
Oh, yes. Yes, there you want to know the time to like a picosecond.
And, picosecond, yeah.
like millions of a second in order to do the accurate distance measurements.
And another area where cold atoms could come into play is looking at what's underground. How does that work?
Yes, so that's actually taking advantage of the ultimate control and the wave nature of the atoms. So we can more or less hold them in space at any point we want. We can throw them up, and it's other than like the atoms in the gas around us, in the air around us, which would like fly around with 1,000 kilometers per hour. These cold atoms, they more or less can be thrown up like a stone and fall very regular. And we can actually split a single atom, the quantum mechanical wave of the atom. So it's nothing about nuclear splitting. It's really, we just split the wave function in a quantum mechanical sense, let it travel two different paths and recombine it. And similar to throwing two stones in a pond of water, if you have like two different waves going along different paths, you'll see interference. And by looking at these fringes we get, the interference pattern, we can tell what was different along the paths of the atom. So if we now throw the atom up and split the path along the gravity direction, one atom will travel in a little bit less gravity than the other one, and we can measure gravity like that. And actually, the measurement can be very accurate. It can actually measure the gravity like by a human body standing a meter next to the instrument.
And the reason it does that is because every body has an effect on gravity.
Oh, yes, yes. So like Newton's law of gravity says gravity depends on the two masses, like both generate gravity and both feel the force of the other one. So essentially, yeah, we usually think of gravity of being pulled to the Earth because the Earth is a very big mass, but actually we attract the Earth as well.
Yeah. So how does measuring gravity enable us to find out what's underneath our feet?
Yeah, if you can measure gravity very precisely, then of course you will be able to detect hollow areas, voids beneath you, which might be pipes, it might be cellars, old tunnels. So if you want to check that your house is like not in danger of being like sucked in by a big hole at some point, you might want to do this measurement. If you go deeper, so gravity can't be shielded, so that's very interesting to look very deep into the ground. In principle, you should be able to see minerals and oil, and any anomaly of gravity will be visible with these instruments. And people are actually, like the bears is using conventional gravity meters to fly in a zeppelin across southern Africa to look for diamonds, because diamonds are found in high density mineral locations. So you'll see higher gravity in the location where the diamonds should be or could be.
Usually at this point, I ask my interviewee, what's happening over the next 18 months or 2 years in your field? But your field is looking so far ahead. I don't know if you're going to be able to answer that question.
Well, no, there's a lot happening in the field. It has been growing very rapidly over the last years. So the next years we'll probably see some more universal quantum simulation results, looking into properties of disordered metals, using cold atom systems as a model system. On the other hand, in terms of quantum sensors, there might be like the first ones becoming available to put in the field and do first tests there. So there are a lot of European groups working in this field. So we coordinate them in our project, but there are other projects also by ESA. And so if we have luck, we won't send anything in space in 2 years, but maybe we can achieve a first contract to build something going up there in like 10, 15, 20 years.
Professor Kai Bongs, thank you very much.
So thank you very much.
This podcast and others in the series are available on the Ideas Lab website, www.ideaslabuk.com. On the website, you can find out how to email us with comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics for the podcast. There's also information on the free support Ideas Lab has to offer to TV and radio producers, new media producers, and journalists. The interviewer for the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast was Lucy Vernal, and the producer was Andy Tootell.